Let's look at the stats. I've got the facts. My money like Lizzo, my pockets are fat. Homie, I'm epic. Don't be a wap. Dog, it's a yarmulke, homie, no cap. Look at the graphs. Look at my charts. You're blowing money on strippers and cars. You going to prison, I'm on television. Dog, no one knows who you are. Keep hating on me on the internet. My comment section all woke Karens. And I make racks off compound interest. Y'all live with your parents. Nikki, take some notes. I just did this for fun. All my people download this. Let's get a billboard number one.
This ain't rap. This ain't money. Cars and clothes. We ain't selling drugs, we ain't gonna overdose. We ain't pushing guns, ain't promoting stripper poles. We won't turn your sons into thugs or your daughters into hoes.
Things are going to start happening to me now.
You've done all the reading. You're a scholar, you're a professor. You've done all the reading. You've done the intellectual heavy lifting.
Or less, eat shit and die.
You wouldn't know a fact if it begged you all night long.
Want to, like, give the wrong impression, because I am very high.
F***ing right up behind him with a hatchet. Smash, smash, smash. Yeah.
Care. I'm a libertarian. What I'm getting is,
did you vote for Joe Jorgensen or Trump?
Who?
Joe Jorgensen. That was the perfect answer. Thank you.
Podcast review. This is Tyler Yonke coming to you on Friday, as always. That was the amazing rap stylings of Ben Shapiro. I clipped that just specifically so we can show his artistic talents. He did tweet in 2012 that rap is not actually music, and I think he proved it right there. Welcome, everybody. I've got a big guest, and I'm pretty excited about this. Steve Poikonen, I think I pronounced it right. AM Wake Up. Very honored to have him. Welcome to the show, Steve. I hope you were inspired deeply by that rap opening.
I'm inspired to go commit a series of hate crimes, Tyler. That's what I'm inspired to do.
Can you describe which hate crimes specifically? Because I want to know which ones those trigger in somebody. I know which ones they do in my house, but
let's start with Ben Shapiro. No, I mean, my God, dude, how desperate for the news cycle or the trending cycle do you have to be, you know? And let's put it in context, because Tom McDonald is a Canadian that's been preying on how easy it is to pander to the right wing in America far too long. Right. And then Ben Shapiro was definitely not any sort of like actual American or anything.
Not according to him.
No, he's a strident Israel firster. So we've got two people who have nothing to do with America, American culture, or hip hop, just basically mocking absolutely everything. They're going to show people just how easy it is to dupe, American conservatives again. So in that regard, it's kind of funny.
This is why I love you. So, by the way, introduce yourself to everybody. You have AM Wake Up. And let me back up just a little bit. So, I'm in Northern California. We were just talking about that. I listened, my wife and I've been a guy that likes talk radio all my life. So, I'll wake up and listen to that. My wife and I actually have that in common, which is not usual. And there's a radio show here in my area, and they're actually all through California, and they're mostly libertarian. They've started, which is fine for us to get involved in, but I will say over the last several years, they've become more and more like strident boomer conservative, and that's Armstrong and Getty. I don't know if you know who they are.
Okay,
you probably do. Okay, yeah. So for me, it was good. It kind of got my wife and I connected in a sense, but I'm moving away. But so I've been checking out your show in the morning for quite some time, and absolutely love it. And I need a morning, you know, by the way, you started a little earlier than I'm used to, but whatever. Tell us about who you are, why you're so smart about everything, and how you got into this, and about your shows. And by the way, everyone, check out Steve's show in the morning. It's every morning or Monday through Thursday, and it's fantastic.
Well, thank you, man. I really do appreciate that. My name's Steve Poikkanen. I have a couple of different shows that I want to try and get a more complete picture of the world that we live in. And I've a long time ago figured out that politics is what happens downstream from the decision making. And it's basically just the PR department for oligarchs. So by not paying as much attention to that and paying much more attention to the stuff that happens upstream, we've been put in a unique position where we're roundly accused of giving people their news weeks, months, or years early. It's a lot of fun. I'm a huge fan of old school radio. And I grew up on like Opie and Anthony and the Bob and Tom show and stuff like that. So, I try to keep that environment alive. I try to keep that spirit alive in like everything that we do. And, we have comics that come through. We've got, people that just drop in to talk shit. And you know, anyone from like Ricky Ferrandez from the Ripple Effect or Whitney Webb yesterday or the day before or something like that. I don't know, man. We try to keep a good sense of humor about all of the crazy stuff that we're subjected to on a day-to-day basis from, you know, essentially pigs who don't like us.
by the way, people are asking, what time is it on? And Shannon said,
oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm bad at liking, so I'm terrible at promoting the show. We're live Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Pacific on Rockfin and Rumble and Twitter. Getting all of the audio stuff back together and out shortly. AMWakeUpShow.com is where you can find absolutely everything. There's a newsletter. There's a kick-ass merch store. There's a calendar with marmots and cocaine and Hunter Biden's credit card.
There's a Telegram group.
Oh yeah, it's banging. It is. It's one of the happiest places on earth. I got thrown into a whole bunch of Telegram groups, like way too many. And Telegram shows you based on activity or who's posted most recently. The AM Wake Up Telegram group is basically always active. There's people from all over the great vast Arctic basin that are a part of it, and lots of tomfoolery and good information.
So look, this is exactly what I like about your show, and it kind of is that good morning radio. There's some jokey stuff, but it's not hokey stuff, because you guys do a lot of solid news. You know, the Whitney Webb was just there wasn't a lot of laughs, but you know, sometimes there was a lot of laughs. So who's with you on this? And then what are you doing on a daily basis to prepare for this show? And what news sources are you looking at?
So Chris Yannick has been co-hosting the show for about 6 or 7 months. He had a work-related injury that worked out to everyone's benefit. And so he's been hanging out on the show for a while. We've got a couple of awesome producers, including Shelley Olmsted, who helps curate the show in the morning. The news sources are all over the place. They really are. If there's something particularly funny, or if there's a clear delineation between something that we talked about months ago and something that's appearing in a mainstream outlet is like breaking or correlating to earlier reporting, we'll go from that. But we try to, as often as possible, get independent news sources, get people who are on the ground. I have this really weird thing about primary sources as where you want to go for information, as opposed to the opinions of well-heeled shits. So yes.
And by the way, I love that. So I did a break. You know Pete Quinones? You probably heard who Pete Quinones is.
Yeah.
So he had me on, and we did a series on the Leo Frank trial, I don't know if you know much about that, but it's kind of the formation of the ADL back in 1913. And it's a 4-part series. I do encourage everyone to go. But my point on what you're kind of correlating there is original sources. I went to original. There's a lot of like little things that people have wrong. And then there's the Jewish reconstruction of history part of it as well. And there's a lot of takeaways that people just have wrong. And I think your original sources is so perfect. And it even encapsulates kind of going back to the Ben Shapiro and the way that the right grifts, and the left does it too, but the right, the way that like the Daily Wire specifically, I've been on them for a few weeks, grifts off of boomers. This rap is a perfectly good example. They're Jeremy's chocolates, their cigars, their razors. You make a big deal out of cultural problems, which are, and then they accentuate them and they get the boomers to spend a ton of money on their crap. And they scare you. It's constant victim. You're the right wing victim now, which is always I love the idea of the original sources, because there's always people that get little things wrong here and there. Even the Texas thing, and we can talk about that as well. So tell us more about what you mean about original sources, and if you're, I don't know if you have any examples of specific problems that people will go down the wrong rabbit holes.
Well, I'll give you something that we've been on for a while, and that's the Twitter files, where Elon Musk came out and said journalism is now screenshots. We aren't going to give you access to the same material that I gave access via lawyers to these selected reporters, and that's journalism going forward. I for a number of years involved in a bunch of various organizations and groups are trying to get Julian Assange out of prison. WikiLeaks, for whatever anybody thinks about it, is an example of open source and primary source journalism. The ability to, with your own eyes, parse through documentation, whether it's through, you know, Freedom of Information Act requests or document drops, the ability to talk to whistleblowers, which is something that I've done for years now and been very fortunate to be able to do. In fact, David McBride, who's an Australian military whistleblower, who's facing 50 years in prison in Australia for disclosing war crimes as an attorney. It's something he was supposed to do. He was like the equivalent of a JAG officer in the Australian military and was doing his job and was like, hey, these guys screwed up. We need to hold them accountable. And they're like, don't say a word, pal. But he was just on Slow News Day a couple of Sundays ago. and I think that if you're able to get into the heads of the people that have, you know, accessed the information, whether it's against the state or a corporation or whatever, and you're able to talk to them and find out their motivations for doing it, just how loose or tight the security is on a lot of these places, you know, then it really does help, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, just give you a more complete picture. I don't know if we ever get a full one, but it's way more interesting the more complete it starts to get.
By the way, your Twitter files example, I love that, because I was, when each one of these were going out, I was like, okay, this is very interesting. It kind of falls right along in line with Missouri v. Biden. They're, you know, having a lot of their disclosure stuff as well. And I'm like, so I had a book. I just saw it a little bit ago. I had a bookmark and it said Twitter files. And each time one of those people would post their little things out, I would, you know, bookmark it in there and then try to. I had a very tough time trying to follow along, because you had to trust that they curated everything to exactly what you wanted. And then, like you said, it was screenshots. So I couldn't go and like, you know, you see this with something, and there's the Mary Fagan thing was the Leo Frank. There was millions of pages of documents, and I just went to the original source and I could go through there. You know, someone references it and then you go and check. So that was very difficult. What was your feeling coming out of the Twitter files? Did it accomplish what you think it should have, or was it some sort of psyop?
What it accomplished, in my opinion, is a redefinition of journalism going forward. It said that we have the people who are saying, well, gosh darn, the media is gatekept, have further declared themselves new gatekeepers of the media. Mm. And they're now running around telling people what is and isn't reality and who you should and shouldn't believe. And that voting in a rigged system inside a duopoly is a realistic avenue for substantive change. So it's a, you know, in and of itself, it's like a multi-layered kind of psyop. But I think what they really want to do with it is make sure that primary sources are a thing of the past. They're sort of openly mocked, roundly mocked. Let's follow it just a little bit, too, because what really are they censoring in Missouri versus Biden? It's the ability for qualified professionals to cite peer review studies, those primary sources, and put them out into the public where we can have a more open and honest conversation about what's going on. So if you're, you know, if what they're really doing in all of that is making it so the studies that sometimes we have to pay for, sometimes a lot of money, we have to pay for to get subscriptions to medical journals, stuff like that, to be able to show this to our audiences. So they're trying to make that more difficult. They're trying to make primary sources something that only belong to a select number of oligarchs or their appointed mouthpieces in the quote unquote approved media. And we're supposed to accept that and understand that things like WikiLeaks or Cryptome or Pirate Bay or whatever are going to be anachronisms.
There was something I had to, now I'm blowing my mind here. I don't remember what I was going to, but Adam, do you know who Adam Fitzgerald is? And I only bring him up as an example. Okay. He's done a lot of 9/11 truth stuff. But he said, one thing that I really like. Now, he hates Alex Jones. People could hate or love Alex Jones, but his reason is that Alex Jones taints the conspiracy pool, so to speak. I'm using that in a, not as a pejorative, but those that, you know, are going in for the truth about, you know, a certain conspiracy, that Alex Jones throws so much shit on the wall that he taints everything. To when you do have a good, you know, rabbit hole, or you're pulling on a thread that's very, you know, all original source type of stuff, people can discard you because Alex Jones is also going down that path, but then he's taking a shit everywhere else. What is your thought on that, that kind of prospect?
Yeah, that's a pretty accurate assessment of it, regardless of how you want to view Alex's position in it. Because when you're that bombastic, when you're intentionally that provocative, you're going to generate a tried and true response from the establishment, which is ignore till you can't, mock and ridicule until you've got to face it. If you face it, it airs one time and then no more. Even if it lives forever on the internet, it's only going to live forever on the internet in the ever decreasing little subculture that we haven't censored off of it yet. So let bygones be bygones. The damage has been done. And it's that, you know, sort of Jesuit mindset where it doesn't matter what side you've picked. As long as you picked a side, you can be manipulated.
Yeah. Wow. That's true. So are there some, and look, I don't want to put you in a conspiracy, but what you do, a lot of this investigative reporting type of stuff, you do fall on a lot of the same footprints as conspiracy theorists. Would you say that's true? Are there some out there that you are, and what is your main takeaway on a lot of these different ones? Because since you are an original source, does it bother the shit out of you when you see someone going down a path that you've already, you know, basically done the investigation, realized it's not valid, and what, and some main ones like that? Does that bother you as much as it would me?
Only to the degree that there are people who are going to be wasting their time and their resources downstream. You know what I mean? Because I'm not trying to really micromanage the way that anybody spends their time or money or anything. It's just, I'm a parent. I'm going to have some advice on that every now and then. but I mean, I can't let it bug me because if it does, then that's going to become the show.
Yeah, gotcha.
I don't have a gate or a filter. And so if I let it become like what, you know, what I'm thinking about or what bothers me, it that's what the show's going to be. And right now I like the show a little bit better where we do jokes and talk to fun people.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking about this. So look, my show, Libertarian Podcast Review, kind of small niche of what it is. But what I wanted to do was talk about podcasts because I like told you, I love talk radio, same idea with podcasts. And then really, actually, my more interesting thing is to talk to the hosts and subjects and try to do, and Zach, as an example, we also do a thing. It's coming up next Friday. It's called Kill Pod, and it's a takeoff of Kill Tony. People call in or, you know, come on and they do a rant and we mess with them and stuff. More of that kind of stuff. Now, I mean, the politics gets old and at some point, you know, it just kind of like get tired of it all. And so I understand where you're bringing more humor on. You know, you had some, you played comedian stuff recently and whatnot. In your own life, when you're not doing the job and you're just being Mr. Steve Father out there, are you thinking about politics all the time or what's kind of taking up your day?
No, man, I try to check out from it as often as possible, but I have real world stuff that I have to do. And you know, there's one wood burning stove that heats the entire house. And so I've got to make sure that there's constantly, you know, firewood and shit like that. I have chores. I hang out with my kids. We fuck around, watch anime, play dominoes, stuff like that. And I do shows 7 or 8 times a week. So there's plenty of time that I'm already dedicating to that. You know what I mean? So I try as often as possible. Now it's not always been like that, but now to strike something approaching a balance.
Good.
Otherwise it's just chaos.
Yeah, totally. Magoo was in here complaining that my volume's down. So let me know if it's up. I tried to max out my gain a little bit more. So someone asked here, and now this is what this, I'm sorry, I keep pumping you up, but we'll talk to some things that maybe we don't agree on necessarily. But you know a lot about, I'm one of those people that know, I think, a lot of useless information at times. So someone will say something and I could pull up names and whatnot. But you're really good. I'm listening to your show and someone says something and all of a sudden Steve's like, comes up with the name. So here, we'll test your knowledge here. I'd like to hear him talk about Seth Rich stuff.
Okay. Well, so Seth Rich, for the people who don't know, Seth Rich was a DNC staffer. He was a Washington, D.C. resident in 2016 in the run-up to that presidential election, really in the run-up to the Democratic National Convention. He was found dead on a street corner across the street from a bodega where when I visited it, it was very well lit. But it was DC police wrote it up as a robbery. He was pronounced dead at the hospital a little while later. Their only thing taken was his laptop, wallet, watch, all that stuff, cell phone, all that stuff still on him. Just his computer was taken. A couple of weeks before that, WikiLeaks had released a treasure trove of emails from the Democratic National Committee. And so the likely theory is that Seth Rich, DNC staffer, was one of the individuals who accessed the information off the DNC server, put it on a couple of USB drives, where it then went from allegedly, where it then went into the hands of a guy named Michael Ratner, who is also no longer with us, who was a lawyer. He was on Democracy Now! A lot back in the day. Mm-hmm. Went from Michael Ratner over eventually into the Ecuadorian embassy where Julian Assange was. They went and vetted the stuff and then put it out. So for a number of years, the FBI claimed that the laptop didn't exist. There's another lawyer named Ty Clevenger who has just deserves all the credit in the world for relentlessly filing FOIA after FOIA after FOIA to get the FBI to finally admit, oh yeah, not only does the laptop exist, but we've had it for, when they admitted that they had it at the time, it had been 4 years. So they had the laptop the whole time, which is yet another instance of the FBI being in possession of a laptop that could have altered the course of an election had the public been able to find out. And yet nobody from the FBI has been held accountable. The parents of Seth Rich got to. And his brother won't talk to anybody about it at all. His brother, Aaron Rich. I don't, you know, there's a lot of people who think that he helped his brother access the and download everything off of the servers, and that's why he doesn't talk about it. His silence and his parents saying it's a conspiracy if anyone says that my kid was involved in that may be the trade-off for him being allowed to, you know, stay above ground. I don't know. Knowing that the FBI or at least very high powered political people had or were involved in your brother's murder might change your opinion about how you're going to talk to people. It might.
Right.
You know, so, I'm not faulting them is what I'm saying.
No. So anyway, the example there, everybody. So Steve's recall, you give him a question, he's going to answer it like that. Let me pull this. We're going to do a little bit and a super short clip, and I'm sure you saw it today. Biden at some brewery. Here we go.
We get thousands. Look, we used to, before the recession, before the pandemic.
Okay, that's a clip. Now, I blew it because that clip is not the one I specifically wanted, which is he says one more thing and then the crowd laughs and it makes no sense. What is your take on a few things? One, are there multiple Bidens? Two, who's in control? And what is it that is this all going to come tumbling down at some point that we're going to find out that he's not with it?
Well, everybody knows he's not with it. Even in mainstream publications, they've been, you know, peppering the public with the reality that Pop has been found once again naked in the freezer aisle at the grocery store. And could you come pick him up? You should probably take away the keys. But he's a menace, especially if you're a dog, apparently.
Right.
I don't know what they're going to do in terms of switching him out in 2024, but the prevailing weather at this point is that they can't run him. He's got the only person that's ever had a lower approval rating in their third year at this point is Jimmy Carter. Hmm. That didn't work out great for old Jimmy either.
Right. Inflation was a big problem with Carter as well. It's not to that extent. I think it was like 13%, you know, something ridiculous as far as interest rates. But yeah, it's not going, you know, going good. What's your, do you care much about, like elections? I don't even know what your politics are. I imagine you're more of a, I don't know what you are. Why don't you go ahead and tell me?
I mean, I don't believe that the system that we live under is any kind of legitimate one. Although I think that the state in general is usually an illegitimate entity that only exists based off of extortion and or threats of violence. Okay. Real or perceived. I do think that if there's any impact to be had, it's at a micro local level. And then if you have the ability as a community to get a hold of your sheriff's department, then that's a really, really, really good feather in your cap, especially when really dumb federal orders come down.
Yeah. Have you speaking of two federal type of things, have you looked into or do you care much about the Texas thing and going up to the Supreme Court and kind of that brouhaha? Now, I've looked into partly. I'm always a little troubled when people are speaking out there. If they haven't, you don't have to be an attorney to read these things. It helps if you could read case law stuff. But And I'm not a constitutional attorney, but I've gone through a bunch of these things. So I get a little bit of understanding. What's your take on any of it? And have you talked about this on your show?
We haven't really talked about it on the show yet. The Supreme Court ruling happened as we were going on the air the other day, and we had a bunch of other stuff going on. I think that Greg Abbott is a little bit too much of a globalist in general for his response to be organic. And I don't necessarily agree. Like, if I was Greg Abbott and the feds told me you can't put up the fence or we're going to take it down, don't put up razor wire or we're going to take it down, I would put it up every day. And I would make them take it down every day. And I would be live streaming that. And I would be telling people, this is what your federal government is doing. This is what they're doing with your money. And the people on the other side of that fence is the people that they would prefer to help rather than you. What would you guys like to do about that? Because we think it's pretty dumb. And we're just going to make them jump through these hoops every day until they give up, quit, go home. But what do you guys think we should do about it? Because this is pretty crazy. The estimates that I've read, Tyler, for anywhere from on the conservative end, like 10 to 12 million, and then on the high end, 16 to 18 million have crossed the southern border illegally in 3 years. That if you look at the populations of the 30 least populous U.S. states, the 40 least populous U.S. states, the 40 least populous U.S., they're all under 18 million.
By the way, what's so interesting, and you're absolutely right, and actually what you're saying about, Abbott should do, I think you said should do, I think he is doing. So let me back up a little.
Okay.
First of all, it's hilarious to me that you have both sides, you know, making their comments, which is now that this ruling came down by the federal government, people are like, it's a rule of law, you should follow it. And it's like, okay, this came about because the rule of law, if that's what you're into, was not being observed. There are people just coming across the border. So those stupid comments aside, they're coming across the border. Texas is putting up barriers. Then there's a motion to enjoin to the Biden administration to basically not take these barriers down. And the appeals court said, yeah, you can't do that. Matter of fact, in that ruling, they said you have the ability to still go and deliver aid to these people there. So, you know, no fine. You can't cut the barriers. The Supreme Court, all they said was, we're vacating that order, which means you can go cut the barriers. But between the time the appeal went in and the Supreme Court ruling, they kept putting more and more barriers. And now Abbott's saying we're going to put more barriers. That is not against the law. Nothing in the order from the Supreme Court said you couldn't put these barriers down. It just said the feds could go cut them. So you're going to have a replacement cut. And I don't know now. I think I'd heard, was it Senator Lee I think it's from Utah. He had said that during that time they had put so much wire down that it would be basically an improbable task. Hopefully, I don't know. That point is, it's interesting that your comment of what you think should be done is actually kind of the strategy of the wheelman.
Okay, cool. Good.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I mean, they should, you know, Abbott should be suing absolutely everyone. Mm-hmm. If it's going to be lawfare, then go ahead and do it. And if we're going to be a nation that does its elections based on lawfare and does its national security based on lawfare and does its journalism based on lawfare with the whole Assange case in general, because that's less about him as it is about us. And that's 17 counts under the Espionage Act of 1917 for having a source and engaging in acts of journalism. So if it's going to be lawfare for all of that, we should be, you know, encouraging qualified professionals to teach jury nullification to everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've said, you know, what do you think about the divorce prospect? I mean, to me, it's like, okay, now, you're getting a little bit, you know, interest in the Texit situation. Without getting too far in the weeds, I've been preaching this here that I think if we can repeal the 14th Amendment, you suddenly have a almost de facto soft divorce where the states have so much power now. But would that happen? Maybe, maybe not. It might be problematic. But what do you think about that conversation? And is it how would you feel about you and I being lonely out here in California?
Well, the people that seem to be leading that conversation are people that don't seem to like America much. They don't seem to have a favorable opinion on what the Constitution at least represents. They don't necessarily have a favorable opinion on representative republics to begin with. So I think that a lot of the people that are forwarding that conversation have a number of different incentives to see it through.
You're talking about the divorced people, the pro?
Yeah. And look, I understand it. I do. I absolutely understand it. I have legitimate questions regarding all of the military bases in every state. I have legitimate questions regarding who's going to determine exchange rate of currency, what currency is going to be accepted if throughout, you know, is that, do you have to carry different freaking physical or digital wallets in order to travel, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to be willing to answer those questions. They seem to just want to cheer on something that looks like a redo of the Civil War. And what I do know is that all wars are bankers' wars. And so in the event of another American Civil War, the people who are going to prosper most are the same people who prospered last time. And it's been a relative slow decline over the last, 160 years anyway.
So this is where I love where your mind goes, which is, you'd think that kind of where we're at, you and I might be for divorce. But before we just jump in there, who is it? One of the philosophers, I don't know, some guy said, before you take up a fence that's out in the middle of a pasture, figure out why it's there, right? And so you're basically saying, and let me read into your comment here, is there could be more ramifications, maybe this digital wallet, maybe digital banking by the Fed or state governments or something that as a side effect, you're just saying it could be, if we go down this path, there could be other problems that are bigger than what we have now.
Well, look, man, if you're going to look at a piece of land and you want to buy a piece of land, the things that you need to know are, is there water year round? If not, how much water can I store when there's not water? And where am I going to put the shit? Where does the poop go?
Yeah.
Those are like the first things you need to determine. And anybody,
do you think they have those questions too when they're doing property issues over in India?
They've already determined where the poop goes, and it's everywhere. That's something that they've culturally settled on, and they're okay with it.
All right.
Who am I to judge?
Right.
but, you know, I choose to operate a little differently.
Yeah.
If you're going to approach national divorce, you have to ask some pretty practical questions. And I don't see those being advanced, and I don't see the people forwarding the idea addressing some very practical concepts. And that sends up a couple of red flags in general. As much as I dislike the state, as much as I have very real grievances with both the federal one that I live under and then the individual state one that we both live in, also understand the way that military despots work. I also understand that there are a ridiculous amount of military bases in Texas. I understand there's a ridiculous amount of federally owned land in Texas. There's all kinds of things in all kinds of states that have all kinds of clearances that the vast majority of the people who rah-rah the concept of national divorce just haven't thought about yet. So what do you do with it? That's what I want to know. Who gets what? How do you dibs it out? And if we can answer those questions, I'll seriously consider something like that, because I would love to reconstitute the state of Jefferson. Yeah. I would. I would love a re-Jeffersoning of California like no other. Sign me up for it if you can help me answer these questions.
So there, I don't know if you know the guy Ben Weir. I had worked with him here in the Libertarian Party. He's back in New Hampshire, but he had an idea of doing kind of a free state project, but with Jefferson. So I know the state of Jefferson, and they're trying to have like a you know, break off, but maybe do it in a little bit different way where you just take over. Now there's up in Oregon and Idaho. I know they're trying to kind of coalesce part of that situation. What is your idea, or what do you think about the, and by the way, on the divorce, I know there's some scholars out there. There's probably some a book about some brainiac that's gone through this and has taken these topics all down. But he's probably not well known. So
you would say, and yeah, if anybody has that, dude, please hit me up at amwakeup@protonmail.com. I'll, you know, please, dude, I would love to read that. I'd love to have him on the show. I want, yeah, I'm for that. I'm for it.
All right. We'll get those. Cause I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there's someone out there who thought about it, and we can take these in. But what about these other practical, let's maybe even the Oregon, Idaho situation. Have you thought much about that, or do you even care? I mean, these are just kind of simple things that, look, you and I are under, I feel like we're under siege here in California. Now you live, I think, out kind of in the country, as I'm kind of in the foothills myself, you know, the COVID thing, it was a pain, but it didn't really affect my wife and I in the little town that we're in. I mean, we just kind of ignored it. And, you know, it was problematic, kids and all that stuff. So you can have semblance of freedom in this state other than taxes, right? Yeah,
you really can. And people forget that aside from, you know, a handful of major cities and the coast, California is still pretty redneck. It's still pretty country. And it especially, you know, I mean, look, I lived in Santa Cruz County when COVID happened, but I was in Boulder Creek, which is just, I mean, mountain as fuck. Yeah. And the vast majority of the people got a big kick out of having to pull up your bandana before you walked into the bank. Yeah. But other than that, right, like that was about it. You know, and so it, depending on where you were, it just wasn't that big a deal. And I think that there's enough people who enjoy that part about California, and there's enough people who would like to reclaim it and be able to hunt and fish again here, that, you know, that there's at least parts of it that are worth trying to protect and save and get a hold of.
By the way, people, they're probably hating us because I see Shannon out there in Florida and others, but Jason Booth's here, and he's a California boy as well. This is the problem. I was talking about this with my wife the other night. I'm like, yeah, but you know, we sell the house, we take all this California money, we move to a different state, we're able to do whatever. And she's like, but this climate. I'm like, I can't argue. You know, I'm wearing a hoodie today because it's a little chilly. It's about 60. You know, so it's in the snow. My daughter's, you know, it's snowboarding today. So it's just up the road and it's warm down here. We got the ocean not too far. Steve, it's a problem unless climate change comes and ruins it all. We've got.
Well, and that's only if they look. I felt okay when, you know, when I lived on the coast and even up over by Bohemian Grove and shit, because I'm like, these guys aren't going to burn out their vacation spots. The if any place is safe from the weather machine, it's right here.
Yeah,
you know, but we'll see, because they seem to be pretty reckless with the freaking weather machine.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Playing fast and loose with it, almost took out Acapulco.
Well, I'll say this though: there's those that control the weather are a little distracted right now, and I don't know how well they multitask. So, you know, what's your take? I know what your take is on this situation, but with the current climate, do you find it interesting? By the way, so this has been frustrating for me, which is I used to be a righty. Now I'm more libertarian kind of, but I still have a lot of righty type of inclinations, I would say. Right. So I see some of the and I used to be I was saying this the other day, which is, I remember you mentioned Jimmy Carter. I remember crapping on Carter because he had written a book about Palestine that was probably just down the middle. And I'm like, oh, he's an anti-Semite, because it was easy to take him on with that. Now you have this situation where these horrible college kids who I just detest happen to have an issue that I agree with. And I don't know really what to do other than to just kind of sit back and go, ugh. Like this whole thing with Harvard kicking her out, that was only because she took on the wrong subject. They would not have done this just for, I mean, they wouldn't have gone after for, plagiarism at all, except for she didn't say the right things about these pampered kids at this pampered college. What do you think about that?
Well, what it's done is it has exposed how institutionally corrupt academia is across the board. When they went after her, and then I can't remember dude's name, but it turned out his wife was a plagiarist too, and yes. Everybody's a plagiarist, and that's the secret.
Abramson or something.
Yeah. And that's the secret, is that everyone's a plagiarist. So as long as you've played along and you've jumped through the right hoops, that PhD review board that also knew you were a plagiarist, that was totally in on it too, along with half the alumni and whoever the boosters and people were backing you for your gig when you were brought on board to be hired in the first place, all of them knew you were a plagiarist. Yet that's what it's exposed. That's how academia works. And academia functions on the compliance and ever increasing donations of people who have already gone through that school, that institute, whatever those programs, and feel like they owe some sort of allegiance or loyalty to those institutions. So it's a predatory game.
Should we care about those elite universities at this point? I mean, I mentioned Armstrong and Getty. My wife gets so frustrated because all they talk about is Harvard. And it's like, no one's fucking going to Harvard that you know. And do we care? Let's worry about if this is happening in your local school, then okay, perhaps. Or is this a beacon of what's going to happen everywhere?
What I hope is that it sparks off a realization that the institutions themselves have become the root of the problem. They're not just branches of the problem. It's these institutions, and this is by design. This is what makes people really black-pilled. So we're gonna go, out of that after we get here. But by design, these institutions are built to reward the people who fall up, the people who play along the most willing to get in the club, the most willing to go on the party boat, the least willing to talk about what happens on the party boat, all that kind of stuff. So if people can recognize that, then they can do what, people like my friend Richard Grove do, which is where, they take somebody who had a fantastic education model, like John Taylor Gatto, and go on common sense stuff like the trivia method, and then they teach people how to become better at all kinds of other stuff. You don't have to go through, I think in the age of, you can make a whole AI movie in 3 hours on your phone. You don't have to go through all of these institutional hoops in the first place as much anymore. And when the institutions themselves have been proven to be designed to fail society, but reward themselves richly, that's okay. That's a free market. If these institutions collapse as other more practical ones rise up, or as people who've realized, oh shit, we forgot to teach anyone how to build anything. Anybody know how to do that? Somebody want to teach class real quick? Hey, right. Who's got a bandsaw? Crap, these kids don't know how to do anything. They all want to cut their wieners off and they think they're cats. Let's figure this out. Somebody get them out in the garden. Somebody get them building stuff.
That's such, by the way, I think you're exactly right. And I think it's been not just education, but look at all this firing we've just had with journalists, right? The LA Times, because I'm getting my news, one, from Twitter, but it's a lot of, it's like guys like you, it's out there, the independent types. And even you're talking about, like, how do we get something done? This is how I redo my floors. I do stuff. I look on YouTube. There's a video explaining in detail how to do it. My son was like trying to do something with his truck. I'm like, look it up, and he figured it out. And there's a lot of that self-education out there, and you realize that there's just a bunch of junk that's being taught as well. So if, you know, maybe the trade school type of thing will turn around. I don't know. Who knows where we're at.
I hope so. And I mean, there was once upon a time, lawyering was a trade too, or at least according to every Guy Clark song I've ever heard.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, people are suited and more apt to specific fields. People learn different ways. They should be encouraged, you know, how to learn in the ways that best suit them. People should have a mentor in their lives. You don't have to have that assigned to you from the university system. Yeah, I mean, like, there are good practical concepts that have come out of the university system, just as there are that have come out of a trade school or an apprenticeship or anything like that. You don't have to throw it all away. That's what's wrong with so much of independent media in general, is people think that you have to throw away the entirety of everything if there's one or two things that don't 100% suit your fancy.
Yeah. By the way, I was thinking here too about, have you ever, I take some mind trips sometimes, which is, have you ever thought about like, I'm either stranded on an island someplace, or you do time travel and you go back in time. Would you be able to make some of these, electronics, something that you just, maybe the parts are there, you know, who is capable of building some of those things, or the math? And so, you know, we need education in a sense to, higher math. You know, I also went to school for engineering, and there's a lot of complicated math that you learn to do to like make things. And I didn't, of course, make anything, but, that's still a necessary aspect. And I don't know that you necessarily just get that. Not everyone can be like a genius and just understand those kind of things. So I'm worried about losing some of that too, or that it comes to such an extreme that it's just Asian people that know it. I don't know.
Well, we currently have this thing called the internet. And if you listening right now wanted to go for free, download every single engineering course offered by MIT, you can do that. You'll never get a degree, but you'll do that. Right. And you have the ability right now, if you choose to get a hold of these things. It's going to be a lot longer process for you because you're not going to have a classroom environment. You know what I mean? This is what I'm saying. But you have to be, if you're willing to go find a mentor or something like that, and somebody who's willing to volunteer their time to help educate you, then sky's the fucking limit, man. But we're conditioned to be in a place of learned helplessness. We're put under this like slow drip, trauma-based, effectively mind control shit from birth, whether it's through media, entertainment, cultural indoctrination based on Bernaysian propaganda. Doesn't matter. You're just saturated with it. And very few people have the opportunity to even recognize that much, let alone try to unwind from it.
Okay. I've got some questions for you here. I'm gonna name a few things off and see if you have some comments on it. You don't have to go very far into depth. The J6 pipe bomb. Have you kept up on that? Are you you know what's going on there?
I haven't been too super plugged into it. I was there for it, but it was, you know, kind of a sideshow thing while we were there. No, I really don't. I haven't, like, the most recent developments in it, I haven't been able to dive into yet. I've seen that something was on the periphery, but so I haven't got a chance to jump in.
I would check that out. Matter of fact, your number one person you go to is Thomas Massey. Matter of fact, he was on with Glenn Beck, like him or not, this morning. And basically is like, I think this is all the facts that he has, he's pointing towards the FBI being involved. The guy that was supposed to do this investigation evidently was the guy that was in kind of the spearhead of the FBI in Whitmer. So there's a there's a pattern to be taking place here.
Anyway. Yeah, I did know that. And I saw the tweets that Massey had put out related. That's what the little bit that I've been able to take in. I'll definitely go look more into that, though.
And I know that you got some fire for this next one. Elon Musk. What's your synopsis of Elon Musk? And ready to go.
Okay, so Elon Musk is a Defense Department contractor who is telling you that he's going to reverse engineer the Chinese Communist Party's WeChat and use Twitter as that platform to turn it into X, the everything app, where your entire life, including your social credit score, your ability to spend money, how much money you're able to spend, where you're able to go, who you're able to talk to, and how you're able to talk to them is going to be contained on his app. Now, his app isn't his app. He's the front man for it, just like he's the front man for all of these other companies to get you guys comfortable with concepts like transhumanism and having a very few corporations that have total control of your life, regardless of whether or not there's the front face of an elected government. That's my take on Elon Musk.
Now, you're obviously on Twitter, or X, whatever you want to call it. Is it bad to be on there? Do you think there's any parts of what he's doing, or let me ask you this, the good things that he does, or that seeming like he does, is it really just part of an evil scheme in a sense, or is he just, he doesn't know, he's still out there trying to figure shit out?
Yeah, I mean, he's telling you what he wants to do. I'm not the arbiter necessarily of what's good or what's evil, but if the brain chip spy satellite, death to gas vehicles, and therefore, you know, essentially freedom in transportation and freedom in movement, if that guy is telling me that he's going to reverse engineer the thing that has, at least in major cities, you know, helped entrench the permanent government corporate surveillance state in China. That's the product he wants to do. And people are going to line up to suck his dick and give him their money for it. And the people that are the loudest and most vocal about supporting him are also the people that are gatekeeping the freaking independent media the most. If that's what's going on, I'm going to be inherently suspicious of that, regardless of whatever internal oligarch dick measuring contest, territorial war, resource war, whatever they've got going on. Sometimes the other side is going to benefit us in small ways or immediate ways. Sometimes it's going to be Elon's side that does that, but it's not our side because we don't belong to that side.
Okay. I do you think government or corporations are more problematic? I know that right now there's such a blend. What are you concerned about in like future or current?
You're correct. There is a blend. We've been living under the public-private partnership for at least since 72. If not the creation of the Federal Reserve, or when America became a corporation in the 1870s. Mm-hmm. That's the system that we've lived under. I don't know if you decouple from some sort of public-private partnership going forward without having legitimate autonomous zones in play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't know. I think that no governance is preferable to governance. Self-governance is preferable to governance. Governance by consent and mutualism and voluntarism is far better. But that's governance, and that's something entirely different. And I'm not sure if everybody's ready for that.
You made a comment, which I thought about not too long ago, which is you talked about control of transportation. And my fear with the electric car is right now, for the most part, gas stations, energy companies, oil, gas, are privately owned, right? You have Prajit, he's got a gas station on the corner, and he's going to sell you gas if he wants to. Now, there's some controls there. Electric is different. That's the grid. That's pretty much more controlled by the government. So you have problematic issues, COVID, and everyone's on a gas or electric car. Your control, your ability to be controlled is much, much greater. What do you, is that something that you foresee, or do you think that's what
it's Musk what they're actually telling you?
Okay.
Every time these goons meet, whether it's in Davo or down in South Africa or Peru or wherever Bloomberg is holding their thing, they're telling you it's about controlling people's ability to travel. It's about restricting freedom of movement, because freedom of movement creates carbon output.
Right.
And that's bad. So we can't do that. We've got to get rid of airline travel now. And you see all of these videos now where it's like, oh, this guy's fart made the plane turn around. Or, oh, this unruly passenger did that. Or, oh, hey, the doors are falling off. Well, I mean, obviously we got to do something. You probably should never travel again if the doors are falling off, forgetting that planes are like cruise ships, as Chris pointed out on the show the other morning. Right. And any time that cruise ships are in docks, they're losing money. Yeah. Some of those can make $250,000 a day. How much do you think the average airplane makes a day versus how much it costs them to have that thing grounded? They don't want to do it. Slap some speed tape on it. Maybe if you're lucky, somebody turns a socket.
Right. Well, and Jason Booth also said, you know, he thinks it's a competency crisis with the planes. Could be a combo of all that. And by the way, that competency could go all the way up to the CEO or whoever's running maintenance, the head of maintenance for those planes, or that says we're not grounding it because you know, it's a cost benefit analysis. We lose a person out of the plane. Or what? Okay, that's a problem. But here we go. Okay, next guy. You mentioned Davos, so we'll go to Malay. What's your you know, just your synopsis on Steve's summary on Malay?
Okay, so for every narrative operation, there's a counter narrative operation. For Russiagate, there was QAnon. For, you know, Donald Trump paid a hooker and chased her around with the newspaper, there's a Hunter Biden laptop.
Yeah.
So you don't come to Davo uninvited. You don't prepare a speech for Davo where you give them what's effectively like Austrian economics 101 for the first, you know, couple of weeks. You don't give them a synopsis of that, while at the exact same time, people like Larry Fink are starting to pivot those talking points, to parrot those talking points. And people are starting to actively, who were championing the DEI stuff, you know, have a completely different mindset when they're speaking in public again, unless you're preparing to transition into a new face of the exact same public-private partnership nonsense. And Malay is just as it's not that he's as weft up as a number of other South American leaders, but what he is locked into that Zio mafia. His handler, I want to pull this up. His handler, his one of his biggest backers, is this guy. God damn it! Where's freaking Eduardo Elstein, who's one of Argentina's biggest, if not the biggest, real estate landowner, property owner. Think he's got 3 passports. Everyone's welcome to guess where at least one of the other one is.
Okay.
but this is Malay, who effectively, people love it when you say, damn the socialists, I'm just going to come in and cut all of this stuff, executive order, executive order, executive order, completely forgetting that you're, that's a dictatorship. That's and it's being enforced at the point of a gun, which makes it a little bit more of a dictatorship. And whatever kind of ist you want to put on that, I don't give a damn. It's not operating in a fashion where, if you truly believe in the freedom of the people, that's contradictory to that.
Okay, so I like some of that. So I by the way, my brother-in-law grew up in Argentina until he was like 12. They moved to the States. He's very white, a German last name, you know, do your math. But his mom moved back down there, and he was actually down there with my nephew, who's like 24, between the election and the runoff, the final one. And I'll just, by the way, and I'm kind of interested in your take. That one, the country was just up in arms of like excited about this because their financial situation is shit. My personal thing is, it's not America. Let's give this guy a shot. What? But, you know, there's people like Dan McAdams. It's like, oh, it's a CIA plant. Do you think the CIA says, let's take a socialist country and run an anarcho-capitalist down there? Now, I know the Jewish connection or the Zionist connection seems fraught. But once again, is Argentina have any? I mean, so my question is this pure? Is there any of it that's organic? Because the people obviously decided that they're in such a shit bucket that they decided to make some changes. Are there any positives to this, or is it all just, you know, we're just getting played?
I mean, look, I'm the last person to jump to predictive conclusions.
Gotcha.
On things. I really do. It's not my country either. I don't think there's such a thing as a free and fair election. However, I do recognize that there, you know, he's significantly popular in his own country. So to whatever degree that's organic, yes, if you talk to people on the street in Argentina, they do, you know, depending on where they come from, they do seem to be genuinely enthusiastic about the guy. So I'm not, you know, that's never usually my point. My point is almost always look at the money that he's going to have to keep doing favors for, regardless of the will of the people. And because that's not what the state doesn't do, the will of the people. When the state throws things to the people, it's to keep a significant portion of them in line, or a significant portion of them fighting with the rest of the people so that they can continue to do the things that they're doing. If, you know, the money behind Malay decides that all those guys that follow him around in very nice suits need to start following him around in very nice suits, openly carrying and then occasionally shooting at people, that's what they're going to do. That's, you know, because once you've reached that position, you have ceded the vast majority of your own decision-making to a large degree, your communications, your movements, and your personal thoughts.
Okay, so basically, this is what I think, and I take from you with all what you do, and I try to employ this myself, which is, and maybe you're not cynical, you're skeptical, right? And I try to be skeptical in a lot of things because, you know, let's dig into it and find these strings that are, you know, get to the truth, and then have an open mind about the possibility of shit going wrong and you being led down a path that you shouldn't, like you said, the fence that's in the. It's in the place. So with that in mind, we'll close out here. Any ideas on so far what has been the most interesting story of the year? Or do you have any predictions about what might come about?
Well, they keep telling us that we're going to have some sort of grid failure and or internet outage. So I would look for something like that to happen at some point. But I don't know. we've got a dementia-riddled pedophile in the White House, and his vice president is a dead-eyed, soulless servant to power who can't construct a sentence without breaking out into hyena-like laughter.
Yes.
That's a bad look for that particular political party. Everyone knows they can't win without cheating. Matt Taibbi has this exhaustive article out right now where it goes into, hey, guess what? You know, there's a group of concerned elites that want to make sure Trump never makes it to the White House. So all of the same chicanery, electioneering, fraud that happened last time is going to happen again on steroids, because now you've got a president that's sitting in office. By the way, I think you asked who was actually running Biden or something like that. Yeah. It's Antony Blinken and his people. Okay. You've got Antony Blinken's stepfather was Samuel Pizar. He was Robert Maxwell's personal attorney. Robert Maxwell being Ghislaine Maxwell's father, the guy who had a book written about him called Israeli Super Spy. That guy, Samuel Pizar, was the man who spoke Kadesh at his funeral. So that's Antony Blinken that's the family that he was raised in. And whoever you see that dude with his shark eyes, like shake Benjamin Netanyahu's hand, like they've had this conversation a lot off stage too. It's because he is. I mean, and there's probably at least four Joe Bidens.
that's the news story we'll end with. Well, once again, Steve, I appreciate it. So tell everyone once again where they can find you, what you're up to, if you got any big things going, because I know you have so many different shows. Maybe name them all and people could go find you out there.
For sure. Thank you so much, Tyler. I really appreciate the hell out of it. It's been fun. AM Wake Up show for absolutely everything, live Monday through Thursday with that one on Rockfin and Rumble. On Friday, the Independent Review live premieres on that. That's done by Ryan Graham, and he basically just he'll take a handful of different fantastic moments from good independent media outlets and throw them together, put it out in about a 2.5 to 3 hour package. So we do that on Fridays. Right after that, on freeworld.fm, which is a streaming online radio platform created by Billy Ray Valentine and Tony Arterburn from Wise Wolf Gold. Those guys have a radio station. I do a show there called The White Phillip Show at 10 o'clock Pacific. And Slow News Day on Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific. My co-host there, Glory Jones, and I usually go in on geopolitics. She's got a particular focus on Africa and the Caribbean diaspora, as well as like all of the stuff around deep sea mining and a bunch of you know, just really screwy endeavors ran by very nefarious people. So yeah, amwakeupshow.com, absolutely.
And I see your shows popping up on X, they're on Rumble, you said Rockfin, and probably I don't know any other places, probably not on YouTube anymore, I would assume.
I haven't been had demonetized on YouTube in 2019, haven't been able to really post there since 2022.
So one last thing, and then we'll head out here. Why don't you tell everybody about your value for value, where that concept, and come on, Steve, you need some money here.
Well, if people aren't familiar with the No Agenda show, it's a fantastic, one of the oldest podcasts, if not the oldest podcast in history. Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak do it, and they came up with the value for value system, which is instead of doing advertising or paywalling content or making it, you know, subscription based or having sponsors, if people who watch or listen see value in what it is that we're doing, they send that value our way, whatever, however much. And it's been really like got everything, you know, I mean, there have been people who have gotten everything from like vehicles or whatever too, but I mean, I got a 3D printer sent, which is freaking awesome, because the guy was like, I don't like to send cash and I don't trust PayPal or any of these other platforms, but I'll mail you a 3D printer. And wow. I said, sold. That's fucking rad. Let's do that. So the value for value system is really just a way to keep yourself unowned.
I love that. And yeah, Adam Curry, big fan of his as well. I'm not value for value here necessarily. People could definitely join it. So I didn't do this, so I'm going to throw this in real quick. You're just going to be part of this, Steve. Go to foxandsons.com. Now, look, Steve Fox, he's been on the show. He's a friend of ours. He loves what we do. He loves a bunch of these podcasts. I absolutely love his coffee, and I've talked about this over and over and over. So people could go to foxandsons.com. If you put in the code review, you get 18% off your orders. I don't make money. He sends me coffee. I actually buy a lot of his coffee. So people, I would encourage you to do that. I've told you that over and over. Please go up there and do that. So there we have it. Steve, once again, big fan. Thanks for coming on. We're going to go out with a little Timcast, Bright Eyes. He sings music. So I'm trolling Steve as much as I can today. Thanks, everybody. Woo! We'll see you again next week. By the way, people, go Unfit Statesman, watch episode 12 with Steve, I think. I'm on episode 13 and number 2. But yours, boys, is this dip. Fantastic. And we're out.
Okay, I'm leaving now. Bye, guys.
But she's back.
And now.
Chick-fil-A is completely overrated. It's not that good. I prefer Zaxby's. I prefer Popeyes.
Takes a tough man to make a tender forecast, Nick.
I guess that's me.
Keep fucking that chicken.
Should I vote for Dick Cheney on the Libertarian Party? Do I have an obligation to vote for Dick Cheney?
I would say so.
Yes.
Did it work for those people?
No, it never does. I mean, these people somehow delude themselves into thinking it might, but it might work for us.
That one dude was like, not a podcast, I can't find it anywhere, and they don't have video.
Oh, yeah, Peter Janky, yeah.
I blocked him.
I'll do it. If he unblocks me, I'll...
He'll buy your shirt if you unblock him, Bert.
He's a wigger.
Yeah, nothing cooler than a 49-year-old wigger. Like, yeah,
I just started live streaming. Cut me some slack. I'm pretty high-tech for a boomer. But anyways...
Boomer.